Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome to another episode of Action Movie Anatomy. We are covering a movie on the show you guys maybe thought we would never cover. It does break many of the rules of Action Movie Anatomy, but right now we are going to break down maybe the most classic film in the history of America, Star Wars. Stick with us, guys. We'll see you in just 1 second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! Yes!
What?
What is this? We're still drinking.
Oh,
I'm excited.
It's almost just a fist pump just hearing that at the beginning of the movie. It just takes you back to being a child.
Spoiler alert, it's my fist pump moment.
That
is it?
Whoa.
Yeah, 100%.
Show's ruined.
There's no, like, there are a few things ever that get me as pumped up as hearing that music. Like,
yeah, there was an awesome video that surfaced online a couple months ago. It might have even been a year ago, of these two high school band students that went outside of his house, John Williams' house, and played the music.
Oh, and then he comes
out after like a minute.
Yeah.
He's standing in the door, and then he comes all the way out, and he walks up to him, and he literally thinks, that's pretty good. And you can just see the kids, and the mom is like losing her shit. It's one of my favorite videos.
That's incredible. Guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. We're here on the Popcorn Talk Network talking pop culture by the bucketful. We are talking Star Wars today on Action Movie Anatomy. There's a lot of reasons we're talking Star Wars today. One of them is that on the Schmodown yesterday, you watched our match drop against Team Trek.
Yes.
Enough said.
and memoriam of Team Trek, we thought we'd cover the better franchises, I said a week ago.
Absolutely.
And who better to be here than our good friend, Mr. Alex Kessler?
A man who lives, eats, breathes, and dies with Star Wars.
It's true. Literally had it for breakfast, had it for dinner.
Ben's like, Alex is coming on the show. I was like, are you sure that's a good idea?
We only have an hour.
So let me give you my 17-page novel about...
Yeah, so guys, we talk action movies on the show. Those action movies, generally you're here to four basic rules. Interestingly enough... In 110 episodes, is this the first time we've ever gone pre-81? Or did we do it once before?
This is the oldest movie we've ever done on the show.
I thought that maybe we did like a 79 or something, but I don't know. I think this might just be the only time we've ever gone before 81.
Have you guys done Jaws yet?
No.
No.
I feel like
it follows all your rules.
Maybe, yeah.
It does, and it's super interesting. It's the...
He's a cop.
The biggest thing, or one of the questions we got asked online is this the most important summer blockbuster that's ever happened? And most people responded Jaws, actually.
Yeah.
Well, because that's the first. Jaws is like the first ever, and then Star Wars was the one that made it a thing.
Right.
It's like Jaws is like, oh, this is a thing that can exist. And Star Wars is like, oh, no, this is a thing that will exist
forever.
That will
exist for years. Guys, 77, before 81, which has always been the soft rule. Number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Who is the hero of this movie? Is it Luke, 100%?
It's R2-D2, right?
Yeah.
He plays by his own rules. He doesn't follow the rules. He is the only person to show up as a hero before the 15-minute mark, other than Princess Leia.
I feel like if
Saves
you're talking
the
plays by your own rules, I feel like C-3PO has a lot more sass, though.
He sure does.
Well, but he's the one with the rules, and then R2-D2 like runs off into the distance. He's like, I'm not going that way, and then...
So Luke really doesn't play by his own rules, and I think it's fair to say that Luke is the hero of the story.
It's almost more so that in this one, it's actually Ben is the hero. Kenobi's the hero, I think, Obi-Wan is, and I think the reason is because... He's really the one that kind of drives the story forward. And if we had to pick someone to follow all the rules, he fits into a team.
It's true. He is the action movie badass. He's smarter than everyone. So rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room. That's one of the greatest things about this movie. You get the confrontation demonstrating that they are the two smartest guys in the room. Even in death, Obi-Wan is still the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah, and you're just... Oh, God, the whole movie, I was just waiting. I'm just waiting for that moment.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. He was a Jedi Knight.
He's a knight. That's a political police person. And then there's the Empire, and that's a military organization, as military as you can get.
It's fair. And
we
will
always make for space Nazis.
And four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion, at least one exploding planet.
An exploding, not a moon.
Yeah, there's lots.
Yeah. There's, of course. It's a space movie, sci-fi.
Yeah, like 10 X-Wings blow up.
Yeah.
Maybe
a
Y-Wing. Maybe 3 Y-Wings.
So it fits really well. When's the last time you guys watched the trailer for this movie?
I didn't even watch it in preparation for this. Is it really bad?
I just don't think I've even seen it.
Oh, no. It's it's really dated.
70s.
Can they do a theater? And it's like really small Star Wars text in the background and zooming, and it's only voiceover of the guy and then like TIE fighter explosions, and that's the entire trailer.
Yeah, let's cue it up.
Yeah. Hey, everybody in the chat, by the way. We're very happy to have you.
Music.
Century Fox and yes, George the Lucas voice. Bring you an adventure unlike anything on your planet. Star Wars.
Stop that ship! Blast them!
This is fantastic.
Oh my, I'd forgotten how
much
I hate space travel.
Here they come.
It, like, doesn't... As a kid, the hairstyles and the styles, like, didn't feel 70s to me.
Yeah.
They're coming in too fast!
The story of a boy, a girl, and a universe.
This isn't the... This is the, like, the trailer that came out later. The first trailer is just that voiceover on black text.
It's a big, sprawling space saga of rebellion and romance.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
That guy's great. Such a shit weasel.
He is a great shit weasel.
Yeah.
There's nothing for me here now. I want to learn the ways of the Force.
It's an empire that he actually kills someone, right?
Then it's a spectacle.
Chokes into the guy to death.
No, that's Jedi.
The Gamora.
It's an epic of heroes.
It's like very bad and very long.
Yeah.
Clock. Hit the accelerator. Yeah!
And villains. No! And aliens from a thousand worlds.
So yeah, so like, all of the voiceover is now like spread out with a bunch of stuff in the middle. Like the original was just that logo and his voice as it got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Star Wars.
With like
a billion years in the making.
Blue?
The lightsabers, there's a weird like light effect. They don't look like a color sometimes.
Because of the
camera.
So the whole movie is right here in this trailer.
Yeah.
They definitely gave away the entire movie.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, guys, that's the trailer for Star Wars.
My thesis is that's the worst trailer I've ever seen in my life.
Guys, coming up on the show, we have a lot to talk about today. We have a whole bunch of AMA questions because a lot of you guys responded in the chat. We're going to rank every single Star Wars movie in our personal opinions. We're going to have a discussion about who should replace Colin Trevorrow with the news that he has dropped out of Star Wars Episode 9. And finally, a discussion about Harrison Ford and is this his career-defining role coming up later on the show. Let's get into thesis statement, guys. This is the part of the show where you share an opinion, your thought, your thing about Star Wars, that if somebody brought up Star Wars at a party, you'd be like, well, let me tell you why I know the most about Star Wars. It's this opinion. And then you would share it, and they would back it up, and that's what you defend all throughout the show, and that's how we do this. So I'm just going to go ahead and throw to Kessler first, because he is the guest of the show.
By the way, I'm just going to get this out of the way. Ben is a huge Star Wars fan. I've been a large Star Wars fan my whole life. In comparison to what most real Star Wars fans know and what Kessler knows, we are infantile in our knowledge. Yeah, so just know we cover this. We cover this just like we cover every other movie on the show, just like we love movies. We're not here to teach you things about Star Wars. We're here to talk to you about how much we love it.
I'm pretty sure Kessler did the re-edit of all of the prequels once on like a work vacation.
Oh, yeah.
You did a re-edit of
You can tweet
face.
At me and I can send it to you.
Yeah, you did like your own re-edit.
Yeah, so. They're way better.
what do you got for your thesis?
My thesis is that if you want someone to like Star Wars that has not seen them and they are an adult, do not show them this movie. Start with just tell them watch Empire Strikes Back, and then if you want to watch other ones, great, but don't feel the pressure of watching 16 hours of content. Just watch this first one. It's the best one. It's the fifth one. Watch that one.
You think that Empire Strikes Back is just a better launching pad than the first Star Wars movie? No question.
And part of that is this movie is so ingrained in pop culture. If you look at the Family Guy movie or like the Family Guy reedit, like there's so many different versions. Like you can be like, do you know who Chewbacca is? Yes. Do you know who Luke Skywalker is? Do you know who Princess Leia is? Do you know Han Solo is? Great. Okay, and that's all you need to know. Like you, every person on the planet knows who these characters are, and the story arc over this movie is more about introducing them, and it's a great movie. It is dated, though, and if you just have them watch the fifth one and you take the pressure of it away, they'll watch the other ones.
Do you think that Empire is significantly less dated?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
It's really interesting because you and I have had this conversation on the show many, many times about the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah.
Because I think in different points of our lives, we've all had a different favorite of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
and we've both come back to the original is our favorite.
Yeah.
Two Towers was my favorite for a long time.
Too,
and then it became Return just for a little bit. And now it's for sure Fellowship. It's interesting because I don't disagree with you. I think that to present this, it's true. It's like we already know everything about what you need to know in the first movie. You know, so if you go in and you watch Empire, it is much more exciting. Whereas, like, when you watch Fellowship, there, I don't know. It's something about watching it for the first time is so important. Whereas, like, with Star Wars, I don't think you do need it.
And with Fellowship of the three movies is the most concrete single movie. There's, like, a beginning, yeah, and a middle, end. The other ones are all kind of a little bit of a jumbled mess. So when you want to just, like, watch a movie, Fellowship is easy to accomplish. With Star Wars, the first Star Wars movie, A, everyone kind of knows what happens inherently, even if you don't. And B, Star Wars 1 is slow.
Yeah, and
Luke doesn't show up until 20 minutes into the movie.
Totally, and your favorite things about Star Wars 1 is all, for me especially, when you go back and watch it, is all based off nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, like that Obi-Wan Darth showdown is awesome, but it's so epic because we've been watching it for 30 years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we had a similar conversation when we covered the Bourne, well, now all five of them on this show, and for the longest time, I believed that the Bourne Ultimatum was the best Bourne movie. I think it's the coolest, it's the best put together, it looks the best, it feels the best, but when we went back and watched them all, it was like, Bourne Identity just established everything, and it was way more classic feeling. And watching back, it was like, this is just the best one by far. Like, even if it's not as good of a movie as the third one, it's not as masterful, it's just better because everything that we came to understand and like about the third one, you had to have in the first movie.
Yeah.
You're not as beholden with that as, like, when they made Identity, they're just making a single movie.
Right.
And there's a strength to that. And Star Wars is different. Purely from the fact that Star Wars is Star Wars. It is the most culturally relevant movie probably ever created. And beyond that, Empire is just a more easy-to-digest movie for people that are coming to it. There's a reason people have avoided Star Wars if they're 25 and haven't seen it, or 30 and they haven't seen it before. And when you're trying to get them to watch it, people have tried you need to watch it in this order. You need to watch all of them. You need to watch episode 1 through 6 first. You need to do the machete order. No. Just watch one movie. Here's the best one. It's not as dated. Everyone says it's the best.
Need.
And if you like them, I would love for you to watch more, but you don't put the pressure on them.
Right. Everybody believes that Empire's the best movie.
What do you got?
I'm going to go in and say that the
DVD... Does everybody agree with that?
What?
Everybody thinks Empire's the best
movie. I mean, it's like pretty much consensus opinion,
like,
about the Star Wars.
Like 100% of people. Like 95% of people.
Like, if we're all going to rank
our Star
Wars...
I would say there's an age limit. Like, if you're older... If you were alive when the movies came out, Star Wars 1 is your favorite.
Right.
If you were born after that point and you were under the age of 18... Jedi is your favorite.
Well, but...
And if you're over the age of 18, Empire is your favorite.
I think it's a different conversation. It's the whole greatest favorite. If you're objectively ranking what's the best movie, Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie. It's the most compelling. It's the darkest. It's the least campy. It doesn't have the flaws that the other ones have. If you're talking favorite, it isn't my favorite Star Wars movie. And when we do our rankings, we're going to do favorite. And it's not going to be number one for me. But in terms of, like, any list anywhere, it's always Empire. Like, pretty much 100% of the time.
Okay, so...
So my comment is, the DVD remasters have aged every bit as horribly as predicted when they first came about. And even worse every year. And watching it this time, this is the first time I had sat down. I actually dug the DVDs out of my closet. I usually just rent movies on Amazon, but I was like, you know what? Disney doesn't let me rent movies. I have to pay $18 to buy this. Good thing I have the DVDs in my closet that I bought, like, at least 10 years ago. I bought the set at Costco. And I queued it up, and I was just like, I understand that the originals, that, like, the original stuff...
Are,
like,
so dated.
Yeah, I get it. Like, the lizard beast that the stormtroopers are riding or any of that stuff. Like, I understand the original probably looks a little worse than this, but at least it would feel like it belonged in a movie made in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
When you introduce CGI in the late 90s, inevitably 20 years later, it looks like bad CGI because it's 20 years later.
It does. It does. But I just got to jump in and say that, like, I honestly think for me being a person, and when I get into my thesis, you'll understand why I'm going to present it this way. But, like, not being the hugest Star Wars fan, going back and watching it remastered helped me.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember watching it. And it's like, I loved watching Star Wars growing up. It was one of my favorite things to watch with my sister. But going back and watching it now after not watching the original one in maybe 10, 15 years, the datedness of the graphics in a sci-fi epic do pull me out of it. So even though the digital remastering or whatever you want to call it, the re-release,
updates,
DVD, the updates,
special edition,
edition, like, even though it's still kind of shitty CGI now, it still is like, it was here and now it's here. You know what I mean for me?
I mean, I just don't agree.
I
have a question. When was the actual last time either of you saw the original editions?
Until now, it had been
ten years.
Oh, the originals.
Before special edition remakes, before DVDs.
Like 10 years.
Those haven't been released. The only way you can watch them is if you have original VHSs, and you have to have them from before 1995.
And you can find them streaming online. And I watch scenes. That's what I did to check.
You watch scenes, yeah.
You
have comparisons, yeah.
Because Han walking over Jabba's tail and then basically like cutting him out and then moving him over and back down was like, what is this? What did you guys do? This is horrible.
Those things I think are ridiculous. Like Han shooting first is getting changed and like stepping on Jabba is stupid. But the things of the actual graphics, like Jabba and the flying and even just the lightsabers, for instance.
Yeah.
It just helped me personally and the blasters as well.
And that's one of the reasons Empire, I think, of the special editions and in general ages really well, because the big changes in Jedi and A New Hope had entire scenes added. Mm. You had the weird musical number in Jedi that's awful. You have the Jabba the Hutt scene in A New Hope. But in Empire, pretty much all they did was like they added windows in Cloud City. So instead of just like weirdly futuristic stark white hallways, you have windows and so you see the clouds behind them. You get slightly updated spaceship effects. You get to see the fighter pilots have windows in them that you get to see the actual pilots inside of them. So
fair enough.
As far as changes go, those age better than actual CGI characters.
What do you got?
It's interesting. I want to almost just say the crawl is the greatest use of exposition ever in film because it just saves me a whole movie. But that's not my thesis. My thesis is, as never has such a great franchise's legacy been so tarnished by its follow-ups. I literally stopped caring about Star Wars because as a child, I was so betrayed by episodes 1, 2, and 3.
And you,
I was the biggest Star Wars fan growing up.
And before Force Awakens, you were against it until a week before it came out. I remember it.
I still didn't want to watch it when I watched it. And the first time I watched Force Awakens, I hated it. And my roommate fell asleep and we left. I watched it a month later and I adored it.
I saw it with my family.
I saw it with my sister, who I'd watched Star Wars with my whole life. But again, never has a great franchise legacy been so tarnished by its follow-ups. The reason I say that, and it's funny because it's starting to come full circle because I actually like Force Awakens and Rogue One.
Right.
But it also took me 20 years to come back around.
Yeah.
I was so betrayed by episodes 1, 2, and 3, and there's still even good moments in episodes 1, 2, and 3. And as a kid, I was excited for episode 1, and I saw it, and I loved Darth Maul. I had the poster. I was in still. It was episodes 2 and 3 that I was just like, what happened? Maybe I was just like a dumb kid. And that's why I liked Star Wars so much.
It was our age in a lot of ways, too. I think the age that we each, because we're all the same age, the expectation we had for something to be so great was, it was like we, all of us understood that Star Wars was this amazing thing. So the idea that we were alive and we were getting more Star Wars, there was going to be more toys for us to buy at the drugstore. There was going to be all that stuff was just so exciting. I was honestly, when episode 1 came out, I didn't even understand how bad it was the first time I watched it because I wasn't old enough.
Same, I loved it. I actually thought it was awesome the first time I watched it because it was like Darth Maul with the dual lightsaber.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You know,
kids love the prequels.
Still,
I'm not still like it, the. I mean, and now they have Force Awakens, and Force Awakens is a better movie and gives them what they want. But when a little kid sees it, and when I saw Episode 1, same as you guys are the same age, loved Episode 1. My sister loved Jar Jar Binks. It was not a thing that bugged me. And then as I got older, I learned the problems with those movies. But when you're a little kid, and even kids today, they love that Anakin. There's a reason that when you look at most kids' merchandise from 10 years ago, now it's Rey and Finn and the new stuff. But 10 years ago, it was all the Clone Wars stuff, and it was all Anakin and Obi-Wan Kenobi and the old kind of the animated style versions of them.
True story. I was in a snowboarding class with Jake Lloyd at Whistler a couple years after that film came out.
I don't know who that is.
He's young Anakin.
It was a big
Curly
deal.
Curly and Jeff. Possibly schizophrenic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I heard about that. All right, guys, we're into the next part of the show. This is Fist Pump Moment. Yes! This is when something happens in the movie, and you're just like, yes, this is so good. I get to watch the rest of this movie right now. This is amazing. And you just kind of lose it. And it's, for me, I said it at the beginning of the show, so I'll just say it. It's the music, and it's when it starts. And the reason that I know this is the fist pump moment for me...
It's the actual music. It's not the crawl starting when you see in a galaxy. You know, it's not that.
It's just the way that it takes
you. Well,
those
happen at the same time.
Yeah.
No, because a long time ago, a Galaxy Far, Far Away, silence, and then letters, music, same moment.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it's when it starts, and it's just like, because I remember...
Shut up, Alex.
excuse me, the letters and music start at the same time.
I love... like when the first Force Awakens trailer came out, and you know, there's been an awakening, have you felt it, that whole thing, and then it's exciting, and then it goes black for a second, and then you see the Millennium Falcon fly and the music, I started crying in the theater when I first saw it. Goosebumps and then tears. Because, like, there's just something about the, like, heroic quality to Star Wars that has been in my life since, like, the time I was born.
I mean, it's the original battle of good versus evil.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, so, I mean, one of them. But for us, it's, like, the most epic one.
Original.
Original, yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, that is my fist pump moment through and through.
Okay, let's go see your heroes, Cass.
Oh, so my fist pump moment, and there are a few ties, like there's like Luke with the suns in the distance, but I think I had to go with you, and it's when the Star Destroyer and the Blockade Runner just show up from above you on screen for the first time, where it's just like, oh, these things are massive. This is probably the best start to any movie in the history of film, and the action's going. Like, it goes from there into like a laser corridor battle into like, just it goes full gas from the beginning.
And it puts you right into it. And, you get the, like, the impending, like, scary nature of Darth Vader. You get immediately.
Right.
He shows up. Like, that was for me. I was noticing all these things when I was watching this last night, where I was thinking about, like, man, there's all, like, Drew and I on the show all the time talk about movie star charisma and these guys that when you see them in the early parts of their career, like Cruise and Risky Business, it's like, wow, like, this person is going to be
Gosling in the Notebook.
A star. Like, and, like, when Harrison Ford's first on screen, you're just like, how could any woman not love that guy? How could any man not love that guy?
He's a stud.
You're just like, that's the guy. Like, that's, and it makes sense that he's the one that had the career after the franchise, really. But all of the things, like, it just starts and Vader shows up and you're just like, everything about this, I'm so intrigued. If I was seeing this for the first time, I'd want to know, who is this badass guy? Who is this villain? He's so cool. I don't know. It's just, I'm with you. It opens with so much action.
Well, the imagery is really good. Like, this is the production team on this movie. The production team on this movie is what made this movie. They're the reason that they have basically been behind every special effects achievement up until Jurassic Park. And then, and even, like, into, like, they did all the special effects in Terminator. They invented CGI creatures. It's the same team that did this movie.
Right. ILM,
I'm going to just throw out a few of these. We got the Binary Sunset. We got numerous people talking about that.
Yeah.
Darth Vader's music, the first time you see him. When Han comes back to save Luke and knocks Vader's ship off, and then Luke nails the shot.
Yep.
The first time you get Luke. Okay, that's just a typo. My fist pump is 100% Darth Vader's monologue when he first sees Obi-Wan.
Yes.
It's just, I remember because, again, it had been so long since I'd seen the movie. I talked to you as soon as the show wrapped last week, and I was like, what are some of the moments that I'm forgetting? Like, what are the moments in A New Hope? And you're like, you know, you said these, and then you talked about that one, and all of a sudden I got this excitement in me. Like, a kid's excitement. I was like, oh my God, I forgot.
Only Master of Evil.
I remember being heartbroken when he got cut in half.
Of course.
It got cut in half, and he disappears, and like, the scream of Luke is so good, but it's just that whole scene, everything about it, Alec McGinnis, like, the other thing that I wanted to say is Alec McGinnis is the only reason that this movie succeeds as well as it does.
Yeah.
I know there's so many other, but he is just incredible in this.
Yep.
He is incredible.
He thought it was going to be a garbage movie.
Yeah,
I totally understand
He's made more money than any other person, other than George Lucas, Disney now, but George Lucas and
Ford.
He made more money than Ford.
Really?
Because he had points.
Oh, you mean at the time?
At the time when... In a career of movie making, Ford has made more money.
Yeah.
But off of Star Wars, Alec Guinness made more money than any other person other than George Lucas.
Well, yeah, because at the time...
And this studio, Fox.
And we'll get into Alec Guinness's career in just a second here when we talk about it. But at the time, a lot of people watch this and they don't actually understand quite how famous he was.
Yeah,
right.
And he was on the tail end of that career. So
he'd just been nominated for an Oscar recently.
Well, he's Ian McKellen.
Like a couple years before that?
A few years prior, but he had won an Oscar. He had 7 nominations to that point. He was a national treasure in Britain. Like, he was...
Well, he's what Ian McKellen was to Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Where, you know, you had a bunch of people that, like, weren't really in anything, and then one old guy who's here to give it some amount of credit.
Right. So, But talking about that, when you talk about he gets cut in half, like, as a kid, I remember I actually remember the first time I ever saw it, and I couldn't believe it.
You gasped,
killed the character.
Right?
Yeah.
You just believe it. You were like,
evil one.
How did Obi-Wan die? You're like, Luke hasn't finished his training yet.
Yeah, and the look that he gives Luke before, you're like, as a kid, you're like, what did you do? What? You just looked at him.
Oh, and you
Why
hate
are you going
to
die now?
Vader's so evil.
I hate Vader.
It's like, I seriously remember, like, I don't know how old I was, but I just remember the moment. it's that feeling of disbelief that you so rarely get in movies. You almost can't get it as an adult. Like,
I mean, I think the last time I felt something so shocking in a movie was The Departed.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
totally. Departed Elevators. Just that. And I just watched that for the first time with a friend of mine, and she'd never seen it.
Yeah.
And she literally went,
oh, my God. Almost screamed. Never happens. Yeah. Where something happens that is such a curveball. And, like, yeah. So, I mean, granted, as an adult, we'd probably see it coming now. But as a kid, there was no way I could have ever seen it coming.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
So let's move into the next part of the show, guys. Let's get into the breakdown of the stars of the film. And as we talked about, I think it's kind of clear, for all the reasons we just outlined, that Alec Guinness is he's the top line guy. He's the guy that you're supposed to care the most about if you don't know what this movie is. He's effectively the guy that they hope people would go see the movie because he was in it. Mm-hmm. And you had Mark Hamill, who, like, seriously actually just looks like he belongs on a heartthrob poster in 1977.
Oh, yeah.
That's, like, the feathered hair, like...
I think he just had modeled up to this point.
Yeah, he's, like... I mean, so we'll talk about his credits. His three credits prior to this movie. Mallory, Circumstantial
and these aren't
evidence.
Even his three most... I had to, like, pick between, like, 20 credits of, like, TV series, TV movies, like, quick cameos, like, voiceovers.
He's like a soap opera star at this point,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
He's on, yeah.
Wizards and then The City TV movie. So this is all in a couple years prior. Whereas on the – and there's I have literally nothing to say of any of those
I have nothing
properties.
To say about any of those movies.
Wizards sounds like it would be cool if I knew it came out in, like, the 80s.
Yeah. And then you have Alec Guinness, who, again, and I think a lot of people know this, but just to make it clear. So the most famous movie Alec Guinness was ever in, other than Star Wars.
I was going to say, it was Star Wars.
And at the time, other than the three – you know, at the time, I think there was a sense that people had, like, there's no way this could be as famous – was Lawrence of Arabia. He's one of the two stars of Lawrence of Arabia, and that's a huge deal. It's on most lists as one of the 5 or 10 best films ever made. On top of that, he won the Oscar for The Bridge on the River Kwai in 1957.
Which is also one of the most famous movies
right.
ever made.
All time. So the guy, on top of those movies, everything from, like, Kind Hearts and Coronets to, like, he was in, like, 30 or 40 pretty relevant movies for 20 or 30 years. And he, at this point in his career, had an Oscar nomination just, like, probably 5 years earlier, 6 years, like, maybe 1971, I think his last one. But he, at this point in his career, was, I think, the equivalent of, like, probably what... I'm trying to think, like, who alive right now is this guy?
Is like McGinnis. It's like Pete Postwaith, even though he's dead, but he was in The Town. It's that type of guy. It's like a guy that you go back and you're like, oh my God, you're one of the greatest Shakespearean, most respected, classically trained actors of our generation ever. You, like, every character actor looks at you and you're like, God, if I could just be that guy.
Or it's like Peter O'Toole when he showed up in Troy, where you're like, oh, it's a really big movie and you have, like, not the starring role, but you're a very relevant character and everybody knows who Peter O'Toole
is. It's just like doing Newman in Road to Perdition.
Yeah.
It's like you take these guys that are just the best.
Yeah.
And you have to have them have the most important role.
Important, but they're not the, yeah, they're not the star.
Lead.
They're just the most important.
Well, I mean, it's a basic hero's journey. There's a main character, and then there's a old person who teaches him and then has to go away at some point. And that's what Alec McGinnis was in Star Wars, but that character exists in everything.
Wait, am I wrong? You said McGinnis, now you said McGinnis, and it's written Guinness. It's Alec Guinness, isn't it?
Oh, it might be just Guinness.
Okay,
yeah, I don't know why we keep saying McGinnis.
Oh, God.
I think he said it, and then it got into my...
As soon as you said it
even, it's not even
speaking,
on the paper.
Michael Caine is maybe a good one on the subject matter of...
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine, like
Michael
a modern
Caine's
version
a
of
one.
That.
Yeah.
He's
but he's almost too
used
popular
a,
now because of
Batman
movies.
Yeah.
Really quickly, I just want to do this to a good friend of ours. His name is Jack Sr. Happy birthday, my friend. I know you're in the chat. I know you wanted a shout-out. We love you. We're glad you're here watching Star Wars. This is the first time he's not watching the Schmodown live... And it's to watch our show.
Oh, because it's happening right
it's
now.
It's happening right now.
Oh, don't ruin it from the chat, guys.
Yeah,
I want to go watch that.
We're
going to
do it. But yeah, happy birthday, brother.
But yeah, so, I mean, the three movies, Murder by Death, Hitler, The Last 10 Days, Brother, Son, Sister, Moon. I have never seen or heard of any of those movies. And you can see the similarities between somebody like Newman, who's, you know, he made a movie in 94, 98, and 02.
Yeah,
those were his last three credits.
About them.
You know, 72, 73, 76. You know, he took 3 years off between movies and other. So he's at that same point.
So you say this is more like he would be more comparable to Kurt Russell or.
Someone said McKellen, which I think is also interesting.
His name, who played the bad guy in Spider-Man: Homecoming?
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. Yeah. Where, like, they had a huge career and then have kind of tailed off, and then now are coming back in, like, these roles for being. But now they're the older person in that movie. That's
I guess
really
it's
well
like
acted.
Hard to figure out. It's like it's or maybe like when De Niro showed up in Stardust. Is he in that? That's him, right?
Yeah.
You know what? I got something else
it
that's going to be really hard to figure out. Huh. We're talking about Alec McGinnis. Just joking. And Mark Hamill. And Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford are also in this movie, and so is James Earl Jones. I've been wondering this since we started this show and we came up with a segment. career-defining role.
Oh, yeah.
And Harrison Ford has some of the greatest roles of all time. You can even go down to, what's his name in the Jack, what's his name?
Jack Ryan. Yeah.
And then you go, you know, Han Solo, and you got Indiana Jones. So what is Harrison Ford's career-defining role? Is it, like, without a question, Han Solo because of Force Awakens?
So let me ask this just so... The question we're discussing right now is, what is Harrison Ford's career-defining role? Does Harrison Ford have a singular career-defining role between Indiana Jones, Han Solo, even the Jack Ryan franchise? Does Harrison Ford have a career-defining role? Who would like to sound off first with their opinion?
It's Indiana Jones.
Clearly, you think ahead of Han Solo.
I think it's... he's not the main character of these movies. He is the main character of that movie. He's basically the same character. There's small differences, but he is... That is his defining role.
I disagree with you.
I do, too.
Okay.
I think Han Solo is Harrison Ford's career-defining role for a couple different reasons. In the lineage of famous sci-fi and adventure franchises, like in the worldwide...
Blade Runner as well. Yeah.
In the worldwide appeal that people have for them, it's pretty much Star Wars, and then I would put, like, Indiana Jones and Back to the Future on the same level down here.
Yeah.
They're very famous, incredibly famous, like the kind of stuff that's on every nerd's wall, but Star Wars is here.
Sure, but... Look at every other person in Star Wars, excluding the old hats of Alec McGuinness and James Earl Jones, Mufasa, and notice where they went. So if Harrison Ford wasn't in Indiana Jones, he would, and the other movies he was in, but specifically that one was the second movie franchise he did that made him a big name, he would be remembered like Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, which are very fondly remembered and obviously very talented, but...
But a lot of people have the argument that Indiana Jones would never happen if he wasn't Han Solo first, and he showed that he was this, like, heartthrob, badass action star
happened
first.
I mean, I think what you say is a good point, which is that he stars in that franchise.
Absolutely.
And he doesn't necessarily star in this one. But I think that when you really talk to people about what do you remember Harrison Ford for, you could ask, this is the question we always have. It's like, you ask 50 people in a bar.
Drew H., literally. If you were to show his picture to 100 people, the majority would identify him as Han Solo. And I do agree with that, but it's tough. I mean, they're literally two of the greatest, most, like, well-received franchises ever. My thing is, so who was Shia LaBeouf?
His son.
His son. He was his son. Okay, all right, never mind. Then my argument goes
and
out who's the window.
In Indiana Jones, Crystal Skull.
What's the name of the actress who he turns out is the mom?
Marianne is her name in the movie. I don't know her real name.
Catherine something? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
So you say Indy, and you say Han.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just have to go with Han, but I really agree with both points. He was the true star of Indiana Jones. That's what made him what he is now. He wouldn't have gotten it without being Han Solo first, but I actually think it's because of The Force Awakens coming back around and how important that was to everyone alive now that makes Han Solo, like, the character. But then Indiana Jones might come out again, too, right?
Well, yeah, they are making a fifth one. Like, but I would say that the success of Force Awakens versus the failure of the Crystal Skull is a good argument for today's generation, Harrison Ford being Han Solo is the more iconic role.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
All
right, let's continue to move through the show, guys.
Karen Allen.
Karen Allen? Okay, excellent. I'll never forget that.
Yeah,
I already forgot who the bad guy in Spider-Man is.
Don't even know what we're talking about.
So talking a little bit about production development, guys, this is not something that we are going to go as heavily into for a couple different reasons. For a long time has been another Star Wars podcast on the Popcorn Talk, let alone every single other network. So Star Wars has been dissected, how these movies were made, the people behind them. It's not really something that you guys watch Action Movie Anatomy because you need to know the truth. If we're talking Under Siege, we'll go behind the scenes on that.
Talk to you about the directors and the writers. But there is a couple things that we did want to talk about. We're not really going to talk about George Lucas. It's just kind of like talking about James Cameron and Steven Spielberg.
Let's do a 60-second breakdown of who he is. I mean, George Lucas...
Oh, who he is, yeah.
George Lucas wrote and directed this movie. He is most famous for being associated with Star Wars, but he is not considered by most to actually be a good director. The most notable thing from George Lucas is that he made a movie called American Graffiti a few years earlier starring Ron Howard. And it's a coming-of-age, leaving high school to go to college movie that, incidentally, has Harrison Ford in the movie in an actually kind of awesome role. He's like kind of a badass, like cowboy type of like race car driver. But it's not like a big role. He's just like kind of.
It's kind of like the Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused role.
He's just like kind of a tool bag, but he's handsome and everybody knows who he is. And that's 5 years before this. Other than that, what's THX 1138? Is that the name of that movie?
Yep.
I believe that's also before Star Wars.
Yeah.
And aside from that, George Lucas basically just went on the rest of his career to only be a Star Wars guy.
What made Howard the Duck?
It's a good question about that on the Schmodown. And you just think that straight up George Lucas is just a bad director.
Yeah, I think he's a bad director. I think the only reason A New Hope is a good movie is because of his technical interest in making, you know, special effects move forward, but then his wife, who he divorced, Marcia, M-A-R-C-I-A,
sure.
Lucas, and his producer, Gary Kurtz. Like, there are pretty much, the consensus is the original edit he turned in with the original editor was panned by everyone. And then his wife sat down with him for a weekend and re-edited the entire movie. And that's where they cut out the scene where Luke is like with his friends at the bar and they're like being teenagers. There's all this stuff they cut out and they reorganize everything. And the other one is, if you look at the original script, George Lucas wanted to remake Buck Rogers. He like actively for 5 years tried licensing it and they didn't give it to him. And he was like, all right, I'll just make a knockoff. And then that's the first Star Wars script. And there's like an animated version of it out there or a comic book. And then Gary Kurtz came in and was the one that made every single iconic change to it. He made Luke Skywalker a teenager. He made Han Solo not a weird alien. He made Darth Vader Darth Vader. Like, everything was those two.
And what's interesting is people in here are saying that, you know, regardless what anyone says, Star Wars is well directed. I don't care. And
Agreed.
It is very well directed. The first one is very well directed, but, you know, it's things that he's talking about. It's like you got this producer in Gary Kurtz that's making all these changes. It turns it into like a ridiculous sci-fi kind of joke film into like a legitimate action sci-fi epic.
Well, I think one thing that's super, super notable and something that I think, Drew, you and I couldn't have really quite understood this until we started doing this show. But when you look at all of the moving pieces involved in making a movie, everything from the stars to the writers, the producers, the director, the editors, the studio, the time it came out, the budget, the marketing, all of those things.
It all has to be perfect.
Yeah,
it has to be like serendipitous.
It's very collaborative, too.
Yeah. You can't really just put the blame or the credit on any one person's shoulders. The only time you're really able to do that is if the same guy
wrote, directed,
starred, and then maybe did two or three other things in their career in a similar ilk and succeeded at those two. Because otherwise, people praised Antoine Fuqua for Training Day his whole career, and he made one movie that was above average, and the rest of his movies are crap. Like,
it's a kind of a lowest common denominator thing. It's a lowest common denominator thing.
I love your movies, Ajay.
Where you're looking at, so he made 10 movies, and what is the consistent theme among them? And if only one of them is good, then maybe he wasn't the reason that was good. All the other people working on it was good.
Exactly.
I mean, there's the famous line from Harrison Ford to George Lucas of, you can write this shit, but you can't fucking say it.
Yeah.
And it's like, what they were given, they had a ton of talent on this movie, and that's what made it good. And George Lucas is a decent world builder and a great special effects pioneer. Even like Jar Jar Binks looks great. Yeah. He's terrible.
Unfortunately.
But he, like, compared to every other CGI character from that era, and he's the only one that actually still looks relatively watchable, it just, he's terrible to watch.
Right. So Gary Kurtz, you mentioned, basically stopped really doing much relevant stuff about 1990.
When you talked about Marcia Lucas, or however you want to say her name, which is very important.
Yeah.
That was like the other part of the production I think we should need to cover.
Yeah, and basically they were instrumental in this movie. Gary Kurtz had worked on American Graffiti. He didn't work on Jedi. He stopped producing.
They had a falling out in the between of the development of Jedi, which is, and it like is very much centered around why Jedi, there are big problems in Jedi.
Yeah, right. Let's talk Critical and
Box Office. Yeah, I want to get into Critical and Box Office because this is just fascinating. So this is produced by Fox in 1977. It cost $11 million to make, and it was released on May 5th for a limited release. It grossed $460 million
domestic.
In 1977 domestically. Worldwide for an additional $314 million. This is unadjusted, by the way.
I have the adjusted one already.
You do? Yeah. So what is that, $1.5 billion?
$1.6 billion.
Yeah, $1.6 billion.
Only Gone with the Wind has made more money.
And so it's a total gross of $775 million unadjusted in 1977. It made $1.5 its opening weekend of a limited release on May 25th, and it opened wide July 15th for $6.8 million. And then I want to get into Critical because this is 8.7. This is ranked number 20 of all time in the top 250. It won 6 Oscars and it actually won another like honorary Oscar, I believe. So like 6.5, whatever you want to call that.
Nominated for 10.
Yeah.
And Alec Guinness was nominated for an Oscar. The only actor in this film to be nominated. In fact, the only actor in the history of Star Wars to get an acting nomination.
And critically, all critics give it a 93, top critics give it an 89, and the audience gives it a 96. I mean, it's just one of the greatest ever.
Right. And Star Wars is so infamous that even some of these bad reviews it got could argue are more for you gain points by pointing out the flaws of this movie and giving it a bad review by being kind of the anti of the norm. And so like there's like hipster level kind of bad reviews that are out there on this movie.
I think it's impossible to properly rank Star Wars in the all-time list of greatest movies. I think it's an impossible thing to do. I don't think you can give it the adequate credit that it deserves because of what we talked about, that it's maybe the most culturally relevant movie of all time. But I also don't think that you can discredit it by saying what needs to be said about it, because it is the most culturally relevant movie of all time. The idea that it's the 20th greatest film ever, the 20 behind it and the 20 ahead of it, I think you could make an argument, are significantly better or worse. I think it's really hard to do. I just don't think it exists in the same space where, like, if On the Waterfront was listed as number 24, I could be like, well, this is what's important about that movie, and most people won't talk about it because they haven't done their research. Whereas some kid is like, I've seen Star Wars 100 times. It's my favorite movie ever.
Right.
It's the best movie ever made.
But the things about On the Waterfront that you talk about, I mean, we just had a conversation about this movie the other day, and it was like, that was when people stopped talking like this movie, same, because Harrison, or because Marlon Brando knew how to act.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it was like, but this was also the first time that this type of level of sci-fi epic had been done, and it kind of changed everyone's, it changed everyone's life.
Right.
You know?
That was also kid-friendly, because 2001 Space Odyssey came out 10 years before this did, or like 1969 versus 1997, or 1977. But
Aliens, you got Terminator. Or
well, those are later. No, yeah, but yeah. But those movies aren't for children.
Yeah,
you're not going to grow up and then after seeing this movie want to be a space cowboy. You're going to watch 2001 Space Odyssey and be like, what?
Yeah.
I just took shrooms for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours?
So, yeah, I think it's just a really difficult thing to do. I don't think you can properly... I think the most notable thing that we talk about here is the box office. And I think that's crazy. What I was noticing and thinking about last night was that, you know, you mentioned, Kessler, that Jaws is the first, and everybody knows Jaws is the first blockbuster. And that this movie established that they could and would do this. But also, it's not like Star Wars, when they were going into production, making it and promoting it, was going to be, well, this is the biggest movie in the world, and we're spending the most money on it, and everyone's going to see it. It was, this is just one of those 70s movies. Like, Drew and I...
The studio thought it was a garbage fire. There's a reason it's a limited release first. It's because no one thought this was going to be anything, and they thought just George Lucas went into the desert and spent a bunch of money.
We talked about this, but, like, there's... When you start talking about, like, different decades, different eras, you could throw me 10 movies made in the 70s and 10 movies made in the 80s, and I think I know quite a bit about movies. And you would be able to probably find that at least four of those movies I've never heard of. Because it's 40 years ago. You're talking about 40 years ago. I can't tell you every movie that came out in 1977. It's just impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Can you
tell me every movie that came out in 2009?
No, but I have a much better sense of this. I could recall a lot more of them because I was alive. You know what I mean? Like, my point is, when you watch this movie, it's crazy to think this was just another movie made in the late 70s. Like, it was just another one of those movies. And this is the one that, of all those movies, most of which have faded in memory, endured and actually became what it became. It's such a rarity. It's such a rarity.
Well, I think part of that is also, and this is kind of the idea behind blockbusters, is up to that point, movies weren't made for kids. Like Disney movies, and that's it. And this was the first kind of like movie for everyone. And it led into kind of Spielberg's career. And Spielberg even created the PG-13 rating because he wanted to make content for children that was scary.
Right.
And that entire genre didn't exist until Lucas and Spielberg started really hammering home that you can have these fun adventure movies that adults will like, but kids will love.
Yeah. And that's what makes all the money. So let's continue moving on to other things about this movie that we freaking love. Let's talk about favorite line.
Yes.
Oh, man. You hit on this a little earlier with Fist Pump, but it's always for me. It's always been the interaction.
Oh, it's Obi-Wan's death, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, it's right before. You know, when last we met, I was with the learner.
I am the master.
Only a master of evil, Darth.
Only a master of evil, Darth.
Strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you could possibly imagine. Like, that stuff to me is just that whole exchange is the best. It's just the best.
The dialogue between them is... That in that moment might be the best in the whole franchise. I mean, there's great moments later on, and I actually really love the McGregor and the Hayden Christensen at the end of the third one. I love that. But, like, this... moment, the gravitas, the acting, what the stakes.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Well, I mean, that's generally rated as the second best lightsaber fight in both the original trilogy and the prequels,
rated as the best?
It's gotta be the end of Darth. Darth versus Luke, the I'm your father.
Yeah.
And then probably third is Darth versus Luke with the Emperor, though I kind of like that one the most.
That's my favorite scene in all Star
The Emperor.
The shocking.
Like, the guy who plays the Emperor might be the best thing of all
he's
Star Wars. Like, he's so good.
So evil.
But, yeah. That's where I'm at on that. Yeah.
That was it. I mean, that's
the same one. Oh, okay.
The exact same.
We're the same. Yeah.
I was about to learn it.
Yeah.
So mine's a smaller one, but I think it's the best Han Solo moment in the movie. And it would maybe be the one with Greedo, but half the conversation isn't in English, and that's weird. And then they ruined it with the DVDs. But it's when they're in the prison, and he's like, and Luke's like, okay, I'm going to figure this out. You just bullshit to the guards and like try and get them. And he like is like talking to them on the phone. He's like, we're okay here. Everything's okay. There was a reactor leak. And they're like, there's no reactor. There's like, and he just blasted. It was like, boring conversation, anyways. And then they like, definitely my favorite line
Kessler,
in the movie.
You're flying off the screen here, man. You're getting excited. Get a little closer to me, buddy. There you go. Squeeze in. Do you want to get into some questions?
Yeah, we have a lot of really great questions this week.
We have almost too many to get through.
Before we do, actually, I want to address a piece of news, a big piece of news. And the piece of news that we want to discuss today on the show is that Colin Trevorrow, director of Jurassic World, has dropped out of Star Wars 9.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I share the same
God, I have had ulcers for 2 years since they put him in
Jurassic World. So the question we all have is, with Colin Trevorrow dropping out of Star Wars Episode 9, who is the director that should step in to take over and direct the third film in this new trilogy?
Rian Johnson.
He's directing the second one, is he?
I want him to direct all of them.
Fair.
I love him.
Yeah. That actually might be my second choice.
Yeah. Do we all have faith that Last Jedi is going to be amazing?
I don't have... I'm hopeful.
I have faith in him as a director and a storyteller, and I think the way that the Star Wars movies are going, and you saw a lot in Rogue One, it's just... And in the audience in general, we just like things that are a little more dark.
Yeah.
Rogue One was very dark, and I think... I mean, obviously, The Last Jedi, I don't think will be as dark, but I don't really know. But the guy is an amazing storyteller. He does so much with so little. He gets the important things of movie making, which is characters and relationships. And, like, I love him. I really do. And I'm really happy you said he's second. Who's your first?
Steven Spielberg. So here's the deal with that one.
That's pretty funny.
He was supposed to direct Empire and Jedi.
Yeah.
And he didn't. Because, and this is also why it never got nominated for another Academy Award. Or this is what they say. Mm-hmm. George Lucas and the Directors Guild hate each other.
Okay.
And they hate each other because George Lucas refuses to put title crawls in the beginning of a movie. And in 1970, that removed you from any time of being contention or any director from directing in your movie.
Got it.
In the Directors Guild. Because he wanted the title crawl. Because we get the your fist pump moment exists in the movie because he wouldn't work with the Directors Guild, which made it so George Lucas couldn't have Steven Spielberg direct the last two movies.
So
this would like be the ending sandwich moment. Like he would finally get to direct a Star Wars movie because now the Directors Guild doesn't care.
I believe Steven Spielberg's a great director. Mm-hmm. Maybe the greatest director ever to live. There's arguments for it.
However, I feel like he's falling off though right now, don't you?
I just think that Steven Spielberg's style, there's two problems with that. The biggest problem with that for me is that Steven Spielberg has become this sort of stuffy, boring director where his movies like Bridge of Spies and his movies like Tintin and War Horse and Lincoln, they're these movies that like they don't really feel like they're exciting to a younger audience or somebody who wants something new. They feel like they're probably very well-made movies, but just they're not exciting. And Star Wars as a franchise has been really kept in this box where they want it to feel like it's always felt. They really want Star Wars movies to feel like Star Wars. And that is a problem because Star Wars existed in the late 70s and early 80s. That's what made it great. So you're asking somebody who's already a little bit dated in their movie-making style to go ahead and try to make something that feels dated.
Well, but it's not I feel like that's a great plan. You're asking someone, you're saying that his style doesn't fit too much with the sensibilities of modern days, which I don't know if I completely agree with, but for sure. And now, in general, he's making movies to specifically win Academy Awards more than anything.
Yeah.
And if you say you have to make a Star Wars movie in your style like you would have in the 80s, I think that's what he can accomplish. I think that his style hasn't updated too much, and that's your problem with it, and that then fits perfectly with the time period we're looking for.
I won't bet against Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
If they put Steven Spielberg on the 9th Star Wars movie, I'm not betting against it.
Well, one of the reasons Trevorrow got the job is because Spielberg said for Jurassic World, he was like, this guy feels like a young me.
Yeah.
And Star Wars then, Kathleen Kennedy believed in that. I can see them now just leaning in, especially after they got Ron Howard, who is a Spielberg-esque director, like do the Han Solo movie, then just have...
But Richard Eric Jarvie, big shout out. Rush, very good movie. 2013. That's a Ron Howard movie.
You do say that. Very good.
I like Rush a lot. Rush gives me faith in Ron Howard. It's not a great movie.
I mean, I like Ron Howard.
But I like it. And I feel like he's still a little bit closer to anyway. So what do you have? You're Rian Johnson.
Yeah, I have Rian Johnson. Do you have another one?
Oh, no, I just dissected your guys. Yeah. I don't know that I really have somebody that I'm fully behind. There wasn't somebody who I feel like can accomplish what I think needs to be accomplished with a Star Wars movie because I don't think they want that accomplished.
Right.
I don't think it needs to feel like classic Star Wars. I want it to feel a little bit more updated.
Chad Stahelski?
Yeah.
Maybe? John Wick?
Honestly, if I had it my way, I think I would just have J.J. Abrams do it.
I honestly was going to say J.J. as well, but he just did it. I think he's great. I really do think he's great.
I like him. And I love Force Awakens, and I will argue to death that Force Awakens is better than any person considers it is. But I would like... I'd rather Rian Johnson than J.J. Abrams. I was actually thinking of a third person to throw up.
Denis Villeneuve?
Patty Jenkins.
Patty Jenkins.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a cool one.
That's very interesting.
A, these Star Wars movies are much more centered around a female character.
Yeah.
And having a female director direct the third installment of this is very groundbreaking, and there's a lot of positive things that can come out of that.
That's actually a really intelligent... surprisingly, just kidding.
That's impressive. I've been on the show for an hour, and that's the smartest thing you've said. We've got about 12 minutes, 13, 10 minutes left, so I want to get to a couple things here really quick. There's a lot of questions out there circulating from numerous people I was going to go through, but there's literally, it was like the same question of like 8 different people asking, would Star Trek have happened if it were not for Star Wars? And essentially, does Star Trek owe its popularity to Star Wars?
Let's sound off like 20 seconds each.
New Star Trek or original Star Trek?
Star Trek as a concept.
As a whole.
Oh, okay. Original Star Trek is older than Star Wars.
Yeah, and this one specifically says revitalize popularity.
Okay, so the new movies wouldn't happen without Star Wars because J.J. Abrams literally made Star Wars A New Hope as the first Star Trek movie.
I agree, and then he did it again
with Force Awakens. He just wants to keep making this movie we're talking about today.
I think that Star Trek as a concept can continue to evolve and exist and live in a different space than Star Wars because I do believe that it's a different audience that likes one than likes the other.
Yep.
The reason I liked new Star Trek is because I love Star Wars, but I've never liked otherwise Star Trek. It doesn't appeal to the same audience necessarily.
I just don't think the success of Star Trek would have ever gotten to where it was hadn't Star Wars not been released when it was, and everyone was all of a sudden just like, I need all of this in my life always, you know, and then you had a Deep Space Nine, Next Generation, Voyager. It's like all these things came because it was just like, we need more.
I mean, the motion picture is 2 years after Star Wars.
Right. And the original Star Trek didn't do that well, then got syndicated, then did well in syndication, then Star Wars came out, and then Next Generation came out, and that's really when Star Trek became whatever level of popularity you want to say it got to.
Six movies with the TV cast, between 80 and 90.
And the first one's not good.
All right, so coming in with the next one here, I have a question. Why is Harrison Ford the only person who had a career out of this film? Other than James Earl Jones, but James Earl Jones does not count because he was not on screen.
Luke had a terrible car accident. Mark Hamill had a terrible car accident between Empire and New Hope. Like, that's why he's scarred from the back to tank when the Wampa hits him. That came because he got all these face scars. And that kind of ruined his career as possibly a leading pretty man, which is why I wanted the voiceover. Like, and Carrie Fisher had an entire drug problem because she had issues that we don't need to get into on this show. So those would be the reason those two didn't go. And then Alec Guinness was old and then died.
I don't totally agree that those are all the reasons, because I think there's a lot of famous people that have had drug problems, and I think there's a lot of very famous actors that have had issues. And Luke is still very handsome in those movies. He could still have been a leading man. I think the reason is... the reason is Indiana Jones. I just think, like, he got the gift.
No one else had that next stepping stone.
He had the gift of another massive hit franchise, and because of that, he was getting those roles in movies like Witness and The Mosquito Coast, where really good directors were saying, like, you know what, I'm going to put you in something because I think you're a little more capable. I said he had the it factor when you watch him on screen.
Right. Yeah. I also think agents were significantly worse at that period of time of not letting their talent become typecasted. Like, it's like Mark Hamill taught the world, and then all the kids actors in the 90s taught the world of how not to do that. And if you look at, like, what's the kid from Terminator 2 also didn't have a career because of drug problems. And, like, to get out of that drug problem is rare and normally involves heavy sobriety and then someone really betting on you in a big movie like Robert Downey Jr.
Once again, we all know Alec Guinness had a long career before this movie came out. We talked about it extensively for about 10 minutes earlier in the show. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about people in the chat.
Do you think there's a reason?
No, not really. I just think it's just one of those things. You look at when you go and you watch this movie, if there was no sound, there was none of anything, you just watched it. Harrison Ford is the most captivating thing on screen, always. His smile, his charm, his everything, his delivery. And you don't even have to hear or see. I mean, you don't have to hear any of it to know that the way he delivers things is sexy.
Yeah.
It's cool.
He's just got swagger.
He just had the thing that everyone wants to watch.
And Mark Hamill is a character actor in the body of a leading man.
Yeah.
And then was then damaged too much to be a leading man, and then was put into this weird, awkward middle position.
All right, we got 4 minutes here.
Right.
So I want to do one thing really quickly because we've got to breeze through the rest of this. Rank all 9 right now. Go.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go first. I'm going to say invariably the worst Star Wars movie. No question is... And including Rogue One?
All 9 of them.
Okay. Worst is definitely Clones. Then second worst
is... 8 of them.
Well, that's right. The Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, not, yeah. Attack of the Clones is definitely the worst. Second worst is definitely going to be Episode 1. Third worst is going to be Revenge of the Sith. Then I'm going to say fourth worst is... Oh, man, this gets really hard immediately. Somebody else jump in with their bottom three.
I can literally... My bottom three are 2, 1, and 3 in that order. I think 2 is the worst, and then I think 1, and then I think... I actually like 3 more than 1.
Sith.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, me too.
Well, yeah, 3 is... watchable. Yeah. I would say the Ewok movies. No.
Yeah, right.
2, 1, 3, and then I go Rogue One, 7, 6, 4, 5.
Seven. One more time. Say that again.
So 2, 1, 3. 2 is the worst. Then Episode 1. Yes. Then 3. We discussed that. Then Rogue One.
Okay.
Which I actually don't think is as good a movie people think it is. 7, Force Awakens.
Yeah.
6, Jedi. 4, A New Hope. 5, Empire Strikes Back is number 1.
Ours are basically the exact same, except for I have Rogue and The Force Awakens switch. So in order, number 1, Empire. Number 2, Hope. Number 3, Jedi. Number 4, Rogue. Number 5, Force. And then 3, 1, 2 of the prequels.
Am I forgetting any? Like 3, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 of them right now?
Yep.
Out. Yeah, so then I Jedi's my favorite of all time, so I'm putting it at number 1.
I knew you were going to say that.
Empire's 2, then Star Wars, then 7, then Rogue, then Sith. Episode 1, Attack of the Clones.
Cool. And, I know we're breezing through this, so if you want to let us know what your rankings are, don't put them in the live chat. Either tweet them at us. I'm at Andrew Guy. He's at Ben Bateman Media. And he's
at Cass Wiley.
And he will Cass definitely Wiley,
and
you.
He will 100%.
Let's talk about why Rogue One is way worse than Force Awakens.
Yeah. And also share your thoughts in the Facebook fan page, guys. We didn't share our things earlier, but there is a Facebook fan page where you can find Action Movie Anatomy, and you can share all your thoughts there and post your stuff, and we'll start a whole conversation.
We're about to hit 600 members in there.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Last but not least, should we get into categories?
I guess.
Or do you want to knock out one more of these questions? Let's knock out one more question. Let's take it a minute or less.
Okay.
Is Harry Potter the closest franchise has come to reaching the impact of Star Wars? This is by Paul Harris.
I like that question a lot.
I want to say, I like thought really hard about this because like, no.
You want to say no, right? You want to be like, nah.
There's only one other, like, there are only so many franchises that dictate having their own theme park sections. There's only, like, Jedi and people in wizard robes are the only thing I see dressing up for book releases or movie releases or anything like that. I think they're definitely really comparable.
Yeah, and Marvel is not the same way that Harry Potter and Star Wars are. It's like, you can be a Marvel fan and love comic book movies and you love all of them, whereas, like, Harry Potter fans go and drink... What is that shit called? Butter beer. At like 5 times a year and you're 30 years old.
Right.
It's just like sugar water. You know, like it makes no sense to me. Harry Potter was literally the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life other than, I mean, Twilight seemed like it might be, but Harry Potter was just like astronomically larger.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, I agree. I actually think Harry Potter is, and it pains me to say it because I like those movies. I don't love those movies. They don't feel like they justify the cultural impact that they have. But they have had it. And I think for that reason, the answer is yes. Paul Harris, great question. Let's move on to the last bit of the show. The question, guys. There are 3 action movie categories. Totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. Totally ridiculous are movies like Con Air, Face Off. You laugh your way to the bank. They are ridiculous. Totally legitimate are movies like The Fugitive, mm-hmm. maybe Terminator 2, Lone Survivor. They're very well grounded. They hold together. They don't really make you laugh unintentionally. And the middle category is like Point Break and Predator and The Rock. And they're funny and they're awesome and they're driven by one really relevant thing. And... is Star Wars not... where does Star Wars exist?
I think the trilogy, every single one fits a different one of these things. I think this is totally ridiculous, Empire is totally legitimate, and Jedi is ridiculously legitimate.
I just threw my pen. You think this is totally ridiculous?
Well, maybe I'm understanding the categories differently.
Well, totally ridiculous is like Demolition Man. It's so absurd.
I assume
so
that was ridiculously legitimate.
No, that's the middle.
That's the middle one. That's the good one. So I feel like you're more in the middle category.
Yeah, I'm totally in the middle.
We have to suspend a little bit and... I have to agree. I definitely think it's in the middle category.
I agree too.
It's just aged a little bit too much for me, but there's things about Darth and Alec that are just so good in the story and everything. It's perfectly in the middle.
Yeah, I said just switch what I said. Ridiculously legitimate this. Totally legitimate is Empire, and then totally ridiculous with Ewoks, and there are like great things in that movie, but there are really silly things.
I put Star Wars and Jedi both in the middle, and
okay.
I put Empire and totally legit.
Okay, yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm going to watch Empire, by the way, before our next show.
Awesome.
I actually wanted to just watch it back to back, but I got too busy.
Guys, there's only one last thing left to do on the show, and that's going to be called The Pitch! And guys, we have a really cool idea for something we want to do next week. We're not going to announce it right now, so we're probably going to put up a poll with a few different options for you, so go ahead and follow follow Action Movie Anatomy on Twitter. That's at AMA Podcast. Go join the Facebook fan page because that's all the voting, all of the interaction. Follow me personally at Ben Bateman Media.
You can find me at Andrew Guy. You can also find our Action Army fan page. It's called Action Army Fan Page. It's for all you guys that are new movie trivia Schmodown fans. We really appreciate you guys. We've been watching the numbers grow like crazy. We've gotten over 300 members in the AMA Facebook page. This Action Army page started last week. Got 160 in there already. We love the interaction. We appreciate it all so much.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really, really fun interacting. So if you guys want to share your thoughts there, if there's a movie you need us to do on the show, let us know. Otherwise, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Same time, same place next week. Thanks for coming by, Cass.
Yeah, thanks, Cass.
Thanks, guys. It was great.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.